I've got a radical idea this week. Mm-hmm. Should we start the show properly? Should we play the introduction music and then say hello?
Okay, then.
Welcome to Whatever Works, our unique fortnightly podcast in which we talk about whatever works in our lives and in the lives of our community members. Find us at whateverworks.works. And why not join our community? Simply search for Whatever Works at MeWe.com and get stuck in.
Hello.
Oh, hello. That was a bit formal.
It's a bit weird, isn't it? I'm so used to the running start. Hello, everyone.
People expect it, you know. Hello, everyone. Greetings and welcome to Whatever Works, your favourite podcast of all time, through the annals of history and the extension of all living creatures. This is the podcast that you would want to listen to with those creatures. Whateverworks.works is where...
You've been swallowing dictionaries again, haven't you, Ted?
Look, our website is whateverworks.works. Let's get this furniture done first. The date is the end of August. It's show 211, and it's 11 o'clock in the morning, and I'm not awake, and you're not awake either. And it is... what else have I got to say? Oh, yeah, aidenbell.com is where you'll find Aidan. TedSalmon.com is where you'll find me. And the MeWe group is where we will pluck all the goodness for the show and add to our own goodness that we hopefully bring to you. Right, your turn.
I'm sorry, everybody. It's entirely my fault. I said to Ted, let's start the show properly this week. And obviously, it's just not something we're able to do. We've thrown ourselves completely. Good morning and good day and hello to everybody wherever you are. And welcome to Whatever Works. Oh, dear me.
Hello, hello, hello. Lovely to be with you once again, isn't it, Ronnie?
Oh, yes.
And in a packed show this evening.
And it's hello from me. Right. So what's up with you then, Mr. Salmon? How are you doing?
I've got to go to the dentist again on Friday to have this second stage of this gloopy thing put in my gob.
Right.
I did post a picture of...
Sorry, can I just interrupt? This is the ultimate aim of getting you dentures, fine, after this several visits. Right, okay.
So the first stage of that was I've already done, and they put this gloopy stuff in my gob. I did post it in the MeWe group and put a picture in of what it... Not my one, but what one looks
yes.
like. And it really is a nasty, gloopy, horrible mess. You need to clean your teeth, what teeth you've got left afterwards, to get rid of all the gunk in your mouth. And I thought to myself, there must be a simpler way of doing this. And sure enough, I found one. There's a high-tech way of doing this. And I stumbled into this article online. I'll put a link in the show notes to it. So they do it by lasers and stuff, and you don't have to have all this gunky stuff. So I guess the bottom line is, if you've got pots of money and you go to Harley Street or something...
Yes.
And don't hang out in the arse end of North Wales, then you could probably do it a different way without the gunk. But it's not terrible. It's all right. It doesn't hurt. It's just gunky and horrible.
So that's been done now. So what happens next? You're awaiting.
So on Friday, I've got to go for my second gunking, a dunking with a gunking.
Okay. How many gunkings are there altogether? Just the two?
I think there's two, and then the next appointment after that is the first fitting, and then
right.
On the first fitting they fit the what they've made for you, and then they see how it doesn't fit properly, and then they take it away, and then you get a second fitting on the next appointment. So in all it takes about four appointments to do all this.
After which you'll be saying, "Bobo, and welcome to Whatever Works, your weekly pop-up."
I don't know if I'm wondering if I'll be able to talk more clearly, but I don't think that I talk badly, even with no teeth.
Indeed. Oh, so it'll be a good day and welcome to Whatever Works.
Yeah, I start whistling through these plastic teeth.
I shall look forward to it, sir, with bated breath.
Your breath will be bated if you had this gloopy mess in your mouth. It's an interesting process, though. I've never done this before, and millions of people have false teeth. It's just that I never have, and it's a really interesting procedure, and I shall report back when it's finished and let you know how I got on. My biggest fear is that I spend 1,800 quid of my family's money do all this, and then I just don't like them in my gob. I know someone else locally. She has got dentures, and I said that to her, and she said, "Yeah, I only wear them when I go out. When I'm in the house, I take them out because I just don't like them in my mouth." She wears them when she's eating and when she goes out.
Yeah, I think somewhere in the dark annals of distant time past, I did this once to be a vampire, and I had to have my teeth in this way to have vampire teeth made. But I couldn't remember any more than that. Hey, listen. My mother, as I'm sure people know, is an elderly lady and is disabled. And I think I've spoken on the show before about the benefits of having a disabled mother when it comes to going to the theatre or the cinema. And they pounce on you and say, "Oh, my goodness, come this way. Let's miss all the queues and come straight through and give you VIP service." Well, I must tell you about the weekend. I've just I took my mother to Paris for the weekend. We took her for a little holiday, which was lovely. And I wanted to just tell you quickly about, and really it's a gold star too, I think, for Eurostar. I wanted to take my mother to Paris on the Eurostar, and being elderly and disabled and in a wheelchair for travelling, I didn't want to take any chances, and so I decided we really ought to travel business so that it would be safe and comfortable for her. But at £275 per person each way, that would have been £1,100 to take the two of us to Paris and back. Can you believe it?
Wow.
So I just thought, well, that's out of the question. That's ridiculous. So I then considered their second tier, which is Standard Premier, which they have a standard ticket, which at the time I booked was £94 each way. That's the cheapest possibility. Then the Standard Premier at £189, and then the Business Premier, as I said, at £275. Eventually, I decided, you know what, I'm going to have to go with Standard Premier. We just can't afford business. It would be mental. But let's go with Standard Premier and hope she'll get some decent treatment. I went onto the website. I started booking and a little tick box came up saying, "Do you have a wheelchair?" Yes, we're in a wheelchair. Click the button. You are now entitled to our £38 each way ticket. And anyone who's travelling with you as a carer is also entitled to a £38 each way ticket.
Total. It's worth buying a wheelchair just to do
really
that.
It really is £152 return as opposed to the original £1,100. And it gets better because when you travel with a wheelchair, not only do you get all the bells and whistles, "Please skip all the queues, we'll take you straight through customs, we'll take you straight through, we'll look after you, the Red Sea will part before you," but also for the waiting, you're put into the business lounge. So for once you've gone through and you're waiting to board the train, they give you gratis entrance into the business lounge, free coffee, tea, alcohol, nibbles, thank you very much, newspapers, somewhere quiet to sit. And then on the train, the wheelchair place is in the Standard Premier carriage, which means you get Standard Premier space and air conditioning and comfortable seating, and you get a Standard Premier meal. And it gets better still. I'm a great advocate of these. We've talked about them on the show many times, these online coupons. When you buy anything online, you search for a coupon, a discount coupon. I found a 30% discount coupon, which took another £46 off the bill. So we paid £106 for the two of us returned to Paris with all the bells and whistles. End of story, but definitely a gold star for Eurostar there. Thank you very much.
Yeah, very good. I've never been on the Eurostar. My dad really likes train travel. He would love to go on it. But I don't know. I suppose the advantage of not getting on a plane. I mean, if you go to Gatwick and get on a plane, you can be in Paris in like an hour. But you've got the time at each end.
Exactly. It actually is quicker on the train. It's actually quicker to take the train, even though the train is 2 hours and a half, I think. And as you say, the flight's about an hour, but you've got so much arrival and parking and going through and waiting and boarding and all the rest of it. Yeah, quicker by train and a lot of fun because I've flown with my mother in the past and we've never done the train before. So that was fun.
I see. And what did you see at the theatre?
At the theatre?
I thought you'd gone for a theatre Paris break.
No, we went for a Paris break. We did actually go to the Moulin Rouge on Friday night. Which is...
The go-go.
The whole thing. Yeah, I mean, it's huge and grand and opulent, but wonderful. I mean, I would not want to be the costume person on the Moulin Rouge. I mean, literally hundreds and hundreds of costumes. But anyway, let's carry on before people fall asleep at our
Feedback on the... I'm glad you had a nice time anyway.
Thank you,
good
sir.
For Eurostar.
Thank you very much.
Feedback on that clothes washing thingy that you put me onto.
Oh, I found this cheap thing. Yes, just to remind people, I found this, what was it, about 15 quid when I found it, USB clothes washer. The idea was that you just chuck it in a bowl of clothes and it somehow digitally using ultrasonic motion cleans your washing. And I just said, I shall eat my hat. And you've gone and bought one, haven't you?
when we were recording the last show, there was one on Amazon UK, and I said that I would buy it on the back of our lovely, helpful subscription people.
Yes.
And I would bring it to the, try it out, bring it on to the next show. The very hour later I went to do that, it was gone. They were no longer available. So I hunted around and I thought, right, okay, then. The only place I could find one similar was on AliExpress. So I thought, okay, it's time to give AliExpress another chance. And so I did. I found one on AliExpress and I sent off for it, and it was about the same. It was about 13 quid, I think. Of course, it was a slow boat from China. So it arrived here a few days ago. So almost 3 weeks it took to get here. But arrive it did, and it was. I got 101 emails from AliExpress, which was really annoying. In the end, I had to go and unsubscribe because they auto subscribed me to 5 emails a day, just trying to sell me other stuff, and it was so annoying. They did respect my unsubscribe thing in the end, though. Anyway, this thing arrived, and it's like it's the only way to describe it really is it's like a vibrator. A sex toy. It is a sex toy, I reckon. I reckon that people buy this instead of sitting on their washing machines. The vibration that it creates when you turn it on is just amazingly strong. I'll do it now. It's got 3 stages. So this is stage 1. And also, you can't hold it. It wriggles around in your hand. This is stage 2. And this is stage 3, the fastest one. And you can hear it. Sounds like a vibrator. And you chuck this in with your watch. Now, I did a test, and I put it in with some smalls, and I left it in there, and I thought, I'm not sure how long you do this. So I tried to read the pamphlet that came in it, and it's all in Chinese. In the end, I had to get Google to translate it. And it did indeed say that you've got 15 minutes, it turns off. And you have to switch it on again if you want to continue using it. But the bottom line about this is that, my smalls were not particularly dirty anyway, I guess. What you needed really was something that had mud all over it or cake mixture on it or something. When I finished doing the 2 lots of 15 minutes in a bowl with these smalls, sure enough, the water, when I poured it away, was that kind of grey colour that you'd expect it to be. And I dried the smalls and gave them the sniff test, and they appeared to be clean. And, on that level of laundry, I guess it kind of worked. You could see when the thing was going on, you could see the kind of rippling going on, the bubbling in the water. You could see this agitation of the water happening. So perhaps it does work, Aidan Bell.
Well, in my defence, this isn't the one I found, and this does look a bit better than the one I found, but I'm still surprised. I would still... I may not eat my hat, but I'll certainly doff it to you. Okay, perhaps it... But as you say, your smalls were immaculate when they started. So, I mean, we need... As you say, it needs to be tried on something that's properly dirty and needs washing, but... All right, I'll accept that perhaps I jumped and it's not quite as bad as I thought. But as I say, this one is a different one and does somehow look a bit better. But
I don't know.
I mean, next time you're sending me something, if you can spare it for a couple of weeks, send it over and I'll have a play with it as well.
Yeah. I do wonder if anything that agitated the water, like for example, a sex toy, a vibrator. If you put a vibrator in the water, maybe it would just do exactly the same thing. It doesn't need to be this particular thing. It's just something that agitates the water, and it'll probably agitate away. This ultrasonic thing is just probably a buzzword. I don't know.
A buzzword?
I will try it with something a bit, you know, after I've made some cakes, I'll put the mixture all over me and give it another go. But so watch this space.
Here. Shall I send you some of my pants?
Thanks a lot.
Here, Elizabeth Everly. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hey.
In America, has fed back to us and says, you had us chuckling on the last show. Excuse me. So very excited to hear my comments make it onto the podcast. Thank you, Elizabeth. We're excited to have you with us. We do like Earl Grey tea, says Elizabeth, but the current favourite is Yorkshire Biscuit Brew.
Hey! So it was that episode she referred to. When she, on the last show, she was referring to some tea party, and that was the one.
Oh, aye, the Yorkshire tea episode. I remember that. Ramen noodles, Elizabeth goes on to say, in America, are often a university dorm room food, as you can get them cheapest chips, around 25 cents. Good Lord, that's about 15p, isn't it? And they're quick to prepare. Much classier and arguably far tastier versions exist in restaurants. Thank you, Elizabeth, nice. And thank you for your continued support.
I really like thin, thin, thin noodles. We used to get this stuff called angel hair spaghetti,
and
I used to love that. So thin. Very, very nice indeed. More feedback from David Baker, who is our listener who's got a sight impairment. Mm-hmm. In fact, he's blind. And he's feeding back on the Dex Fit Cut Resistant Gloves. Hello, Ted and Aidan, he says. I purchased the gloves you highlighted in I Wonder Who Bought It on the last show. As you know, I'm blind, hence preparing food can be hazardous. So I decided to go to YouTube and get some tips. I typed in blind cooking and put a link into the YouTube video he found, which was very helpful, 12 minutes long. I had no idea about these kinds of gloves, so I went to our favourite store to find them and did so, as you saw. I realised afterwards that they were on offer and they had a new and improved pair out. The new improved ones are the same, except they're thinner, but still come to the same standards as the one I bought. I bought the size slightly smaller than I would normally for gloves, as I have short fingers and I did not want excess hanging off my fingertips. So, they're quite tight, but they go on fine and they fit well. While dicing and slicing, I have caught them numerous times without any loss of blood yet. I will definitely get the new one soon. Just a side thought, given my previous contribution about the, if you remember, that strimmer thingy that you need...
Oh, yes, indeed, yes.
You need to watch your feet with. I wonder if they also do similar for toes, says David. Yeah, steel toe caps, gloves on your feet.
Ian, what's your favourite food, Tedward? If you remember on the last show, so I can't remember quite which one of us brought it up, but somehow we got to the subject of favourite foods and flavours, and Muggins here said, oh, wouldn't it be nice to ask people what they think? And basically we did. And of course, there's no right or wrong answers. It's entirely subjective. One man's blood is definitely another man's poison. So we did. We said, what's your favourite food? And we started a thread, which got quite a bit of attention. And I started the ball rolling by saying that my absolute favourite flavour is garlic. Garlic can be served with anything.
Oh, that's how it started, because it was that garlic crusher thing, wasn't it?
Oh, it was. It was the garlic crusher. Yeah. And I said, that's absolutely my favourite food in the world, flavour. And my favourite food is salmon. That's the fish.
Whoa!
The fish, not the presenter. yeah, I mean, salmon and garlic. Well, I mean, there, I'm heaven and back. So, and then we put it out to the group. We said, OK, what does everybody else like? And you can kick us off, Ted.
Yeah, my favourite flavour, really, is vanilla. If I ever go for ice cream, I always choose vanilla, as long as it's a proper vanilla and not a yellow Wool's vanilla, which just tastes nothing like vanilla at all.
Yes, yes.
So vanilla, I tend to go for, if it's a good vanilla. And also, my other one is Jarlsberg cheese. I adore Jarlsberg cheese, probably because it's sweet. It's a Swiss holy cheese, and it's just delightful. A bit like Emmental.
Well, you're in good company. David Hewitt came back saying one word, brie.
Oh, yeah, I like brie as well. John Trimmer, he says, oh, here we go, blimey. he says, Samyak Buldak Korean noodles, various flavours, all with a good level of heat. My go-to pretty much every lunchtime. Oh, nice.
Wow, I can't go near hot food, I'm afraid. Spicy food just doesn't work for me. Ed Hauser says, cinnamon. Ah, oh, I'm with you there, Ed. Cinnamon and pizza.
Oh, no, I don't like cinnamon. You can keep your cinnamon.
Really?
I'll take the pizza, though. Ooh. Particularly when I've got some teeth. Oh, here we go. It's my turn again. Look, yep. Matthew Jones says, Old El Paso Fajita, the spicy ones. Just something about that smoky, spicy flavour combined with the salsa, he says.
Oh, no, you see, there we are, spicy again. But as you say, courses for courses. Philip Ray, a good quality farmhouse cheddar. Unfortunately, impossible here to get here in Malaysia. And then he also says, and I don't know if you get that in Malaysia either, scones, jam and clotted cream. A traditional Devon cream tea. Good for you, yeah. Philip. I hope you can get that in Malaysia.
Somebody recently sent us a box of Devon scones, jam and clotted cream in this box set.
Yes.
There was two scones in it, two little tubs of clotted cream and two little things of jam. And there was two tea bags in there. And we thought to ourselves, oh, that's a nice little thing. Anyway, we looked up online how much it cost, and it was £22.
Wow!
For these people that had sent it to us, £22. I said to my dad, we could have bought all of that down at Tesco for about £3, probably. Miserable git that I am.
I was going to say, I hope the people who gave it to you aren't listening.
Yeah, I very much doubt it somehow. Farmhouse cheddar, though. The thing I was going to say about that was that when you get a really strong, tasty cheddar, I totally agree, that's a lovely taste. But these wishy-washy, mild cheddars, just not worth bothering with. Do you not agree?
Well, not really, no. I do prefer a slightly more mild taste to my cheese.
Oh, right. Okay.
Each to their own. Now, yes, here indeed. We go again. You've got another unpronounceable hot dish coming.
Oh, blimey. Chris Clayton says, anything is elevated with chilli. So I'm going with the classic Thai dish, pad krapao gai. Let me know, Chris, how I pronounce that or not. Thai basil chicken loaded with chilli and garlic. Yeah, I've got all the hot ones, which is fine. I quite like all this spicy food.
Oh, no. I mean, at least you've got the word garlic at the end I can associate with, but that was about it, I'm afraid. And finally, Danny Hoy comes in with sweet and salty, although at the same time. Well, no, there's a thing.
Yes, I mean, at the same time.
One of my favourite things in the world is salted chocolate at the moment. I mean, that would have been my number three. Salted chocolate is good. However, more and more and more now you have to have the bloody caramel with it. There was a period when salted chocolate was in and was the big thing, and now it's salt and caramel chocolate, which I don't, which I'm not into at all. So I'm halfway with you there, Danny.
On reflection, I don't know what you mean, because I don't think I've ever had salty chocolate. I've only had the caramel one, so I'll try and find some. That sounds interesting.
Wow, dark chocolate with salt. Dark chocolate with
sea
salt.
Don't like dark chocolate. Milk chocolate, aren't
I? Oh, well, there you are, you see. We had this with the coffee beans last show, didn't we? So,
yes.
Your loss.
Last bit of feedback from the last show. Eneloop batteries, we were talking about, versus Amazon's own. Danny Hoy says, regarding the Eneloop batteries, isn't the reason why they are so expensive, more expensive than the Amazon ones, because they're higher quality and specifically designed with a low rate of self-discharge. Or in other words, you can charge them, bung them in a drawer or cupboard for months, and years later, they'll have a decent level of charge in them, while cheaper batteries may already be flat. I do have some Eneloop AA batteries for use on my flash gun for photography, and find they work fairly well in this respect. I wonder if the cheaper ones would as well. So that's in testing at the moment, Danny. Thanks for your feedback. We need to test that over time to see if what you're saying is true. We do charge them up and leave them in a bag before they're needed, so we'll see if they've depleted or not. So thanks for your feedback.
You get what you pay for, that's what I think.
Well, not always.
Now, you said that was the last one. You were wrong, sir. There's three more.
No. The last bit of feedback from the last show. These are new ones.
Oh, I see. Oh, I sit corrected. so sorry. Steve Litchfield then brings us a brand new item. Nothing to do with the last show at all. Tomad tailored boot liners. I'm really impressed with these, says Steve. They're custom made for each specific car model, so they just drop into place, stay firm, and keep mucky things from messing up the space around and underneath and in your car. Perfect for dump runs. Now, I have to say I jumped at this, as listeners will know. I'm the very happy owner of a brand new, I mean new to me, Polestar 2 automobile, and I jumped onto this to buy myself one. Well, Steve Litchfield, they don't make one for the Polestar. Boo! However, in principle, yes, it is a marvellous idea. It's a sort of moulded piece of plastic with edges. It seems to have edges that come up a good sort of couple of inches in old money. So you could actually, you know, you could spill a bottle of milk in there and it would not go anywhere in the car. Excellent, except that I can't get one because they don't do it for my car.
Brilliant. right, OK. Gareth Williams is next on pickleball. I've never heard of pickleball.
Oh, I think we mentioned it.
I don't remember.
No, I was going to say we mentioned it, but then that would be deflating your saying you've never heard of it, because I'd have to say, yes, you have heard of it. We mentioned it.
Have we? Did we? What? You mean ages ago?
No, I'm not sure. Maybe. Oh, OK, I'll shut up. Start again.
No, it's fine. We'll carry on. I would best describe it, says Gareth, as tennis, but more fun. I've played tennis and many other sports for decades, but only very recently have I tried pickleball. I would now rather play pickleball than any other bat and ball sport. It's fun, fast, or as fast as you like, and very accessible. Apparently, yet another fastest growing sport. Now, the idea here is that you have, if you watch the video, which we'll link to in the show notes, you can see that it's a kind of little version of tennis, or a big version of table tennis, and the net is less high, and it's just smaller, and you know, I guess you can, as Gareth says, you can move around as fast or as not fast as you like, and if you're really lazy like me, you can let everyone else do the running around and just stand still. So yeah, interesting. Never heard of it, had you? Oh, yes, you had, hadn't you?
You know what? I think they discussed it on the radio. I think I heard about it on PM. Ah. And so I apologise, sir. It was nothing to do with you at all. Matthew Jones brings us British Newspaper Archive. Now, this is rather fun. This is a website. An archive of British newspapers. Duh. Matthew says, I had to pay $14.99 for a month's access, but what a rabbit hole. You can see the overview results without paying, but to drill down and actually read the page from the paper, you have to pay. Yes, as I found out when I had a play. Learning to use the search effectively took a couple of hours, but once I'd mastered it, I found myself finding all kinds of weird and wonderful stuff. Stories about myself, my friends, my enemies. I lost an entire evening to this last night, and I've barely scratched the surface. And Matthew kindly, I think it's Ted Salmon actually, has kindly given a link to both Aidan Bell and Alan Gildea searches.
I was trying to work out which two people that I know personally are likely to have the most kind of newspaper hits.
Oh, I see.
And you and Alan Gildea on our Projector Room podcast, and you are both actors, and I thought that would be the case. So there are references certainly in there, but I didn't pay to get the drill down reference.
No, nor did I, but I had a look at the Aidan Bell one, and indeed I did see a couple of articles, one ancient, a pantomime I did when I was about 16 or something, so they go back a long way. The problem is, I mean, unless your name is, you know, then you're going to find there were so many other Aidan Bells all over the place that you've got to sort them all out. But very interesting, yes, as Matthew says, if you've got some hours to fall down the rabbit hole and play, I'm probably well worth $14.99 for 30 days of self-gratulation.
or you could give it to someone as a Christmas present, couldn't you? The 1 month's access, £15. You've got a month to play with this.
Yes. If it's somebody you know who has a reason to perhaps be in the paper a few times, then definitely worth the punt. Thank you.
Indeed, yes.
Yes.
I wonder who bought it.
Right, who bought what and why?
Solar lantern wall lights. I don't know why, and I don't know who. I wonder who bought it.
I shouldn't have asked, really, should I?
Those are the base criteria. Okay, so these solar lantern wall lights just look really nice. Actually, that picture on the website is deceptively... It makes them look huge by that door, but they're not. They're only about 11 inches high or something. Anyway, 2 for £37.99 with a £10 voucher at the moment, if it's still there. Heavy glass and stainless steel makeup of the actual device. LED lights inside, rechargeable by built-in crystalline solar panels. Charging for 6 to 8 hours, so maybe not in the deepest winter, can illuminate for 8 to 10 hours. In the summer. Automatically turn on at dusk and off at dawn. IP65 rating, so kind of waterproof. No wiring needed, obviously, because it works off of the solar panels. And it comes with hooks and screws. So whoever bought this, it'd be really interesting to hear back from you, because my experience with these solar panelled lights is that they just don't charge up enough. And if you wake up at like 4 o'clock in the morning, they're finished, they're done. They don't last all night. This 8 to 10 hours, I think, assumes that you live in somewhere like Cairo, and you know you've got a whole load of daytime hours to charge it up fully and properly. Try that in North Wales, and you don't stand a chance when it's drizzling and raining and snowing and windy. Anyway, I'm very grateful for you for having bought it. Whatever, but whoever you are, if you want to come forward, do let us know how good they are and how well you've done. Have you got any of these things hanging around your house?
Well, no, and actually, I agree with you, and I concur with what you said, that they, for me also, they tend not to work. They tend to start out all right for the first few minutes, and then they're just... I steer away from solar now. I haven't had good experience with solar for exactly the reasons you outlined. Not that I want to poo-poo this purchase, because you never know. These could be good ones. By the way, they're £34 on Amazon today with a £4 voucher, so £30 if you want to buy them now.
Oh, okay.
So, yes, like yourself, Ted, I'd be very interested to know if you'd be so kind, our mystery purchaser, to reveal yourself to the panel and let us know what you think. Because, I'm curious. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much anyway. And thank you to everyone who uses my affiliate link to buy stuff from Amazon. It really helps. I promise you, it really helps. Even though it might only be a few pennies here and there, you use my URL, which is tinyurl.com/AmazonTedUK, shop as normal, and I get a few pennies or pounds if you spend enough. Into the pot to keep things going this end. So thank you for doing that, and you're very highly valued, you lovely people.
Here, sing us a song, Ted.
Still using and still using.
Oh, lovely, sir. Right, What am I still using? I bought this in 2017, according to Amazon, yet it took me 3 years to bring it onto the show. In July 2020, show 116. And
ooh,
it
that
is
looks nice.
A Citro Twin Orange Squeezer Orange Juice Maker. I'm also a little baffled because something tells me that I bought one in a second-hand shop. I didn't remember buying it from Amazon. So the origin is slightly unknown, but I know I've had it for years. And it comes out in the hot, hot weather. And it has one task, and it performs it admirably, and that is to produce freshly squeezed orange juice. It's an orange plastic device. I can't think how to describe the size of it, but it sits in the kitchen, and you lift this thing up, and you put the two orange. You cut an orange in half, put the two halves in. The idea is you close the lid on it, and that presses the oranges down onto two rotating things, which automatically start with the pressure. But I find that that doesn't work. What I do is I just use God's good hands and press them down on the oranges, and that works fine, and I get a much, much better and more efficient orange squeeze and a hand massage to boot by just pressing the oranges down with my bare hands onto the things. And you get beautiful. I mean, you know, it's squeezed and then you drink it within a minute and it's absolutely delicious. We keep oranges in the fridge, and when the weather really gets very, very hot, as it might do this afternoon, in fact, as we speak, out comes the Citro Twin, and I cut up some oranges and make some beautiful freshly squeezed orange juice. That's it. That's all it does. But it's fabulous and I'm still using it.
How is it powered?
It's mains. Plugs into the wall. So.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
It looks about the same size as a kind of Duo copy maker.
Yeah, something around copy that. Maker. Yes, yeah, yes, yeah. Yes.
But it's currently unavailable, which is a shame. Probably not surprising 8 years later.
Yes, I bought I bought mine, I think, for $27.40, according to Amazon, although I have a feeling I bought it from a charity shop, but maybe there was a second one, and maybe I bought a charity shop one that broke, and then I bought it from Amazon thereafter. Who knows? It's very good, and if you can find one or anything similar, there's nothing like freshly squeezed. I mean, you know, you can buy from the supermarket what purports to be freshly squeezed orange juice, but if you actually freshly squeeze your own oranges, it's chalk and cheese. It's just phenomenally different.
There appears to be something in the lid that cuts the orange in half as well.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I've not bothered with any of that. I think a bit like the solar lights, I'm afraid that just turned out not to be very efficient. And it's much easier just to slice them with a knife and then press them down on the thing, which I do, which I've been doing for years now. I haven't touched the lid in a long time.
Looks lovely. I'm someone that buys orange juice from the supermarket, you're right, but it'd be quite nice to have something like this. I agree, and just because this is unavailable, I'm sure there are tons of other ones out there.
That's right. There may be one to pick up on eBay, or your new favourite website, AliExpress, may have one.
Well, at least it got here this time, and it wasn't broken, unlike the last time. And having never given me a refund for that, they still owe me 18 quid. No, 16 quid, I think it was. Right, I'm going
to
bring.
He's so bitter.
Unlike your lovely oranges, I'm still using my Watson's Audio Turntable LP Record Vinyl Storage Table. This is an old-fashioned record player stand, basically, with some slots underneath it to hold vertically your LPs. Mm-hmm. My record player sits on the top. My audio machine that produces the stereo sound sits in the middle cubby hole, and underneath you've got these vertical slots. I bought this also in 2017 and brought it to the show then. It was a self-assembly thing, which was done quite easily and straightforwardly. It was 69 quid when I bought it. As you'd imagine, it's not available now, but there are other options out there. And it's really nice, yeah. It's held my vinyl LPs upright ever since, and it looks nice, and it's nice wood, and I thought it was a really nice bit of furniture, and I've still got it.
Well, not only is it definitely a very nice bit of furniture, but it's also still available. It's on Amazon. It's £87.98.
Oh, right.
So it's gone up, but it's still available, sir.
Very good.
Want another one?
No.
Ian Barton.
What? Chips.
What? Oh, yeah, sorry. Sorry there. Ready, sir? Here we go.
Yes, sorry, carry on.
Ian Barton. It's something in the air today, isn't there? Ian Barton brings us green light tape sticker. Tape that glows in the dark. Ian says, as someone who sometimes, more often, drops things outside, usually in a field, and can't find them again, this seems to be worth a punt. It's basically sticky tape that glows in the dark.
Hurrah.
You could use it to put on steps so you can see the edges in the dark, or after too much booze. It's self-adhesive and claims to stick anywhere. £6.99, and then it says /$5.99. I don't know if that's two different sizes or different thicknesses. Now, I have a couple of things to say here. First of all, I find anything that glows in the dark a little bit like solar lights again. They tend to work for a bit and then stop. You have to sort of shine a light brightly on it for a long time, and then it glows for about 5 minutes. I mean, have you had experience with glow-in-the-dark stuff? I've never come across anything glow-in-the-dark that really properly glows in the dark for any length of time.
Only stuff that I've used... only things inside clocks, luminous clocks. That's the only the only time I've used it. And then you're quite right. If you wake up, if it's the middle of winter and you wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning, very often it's kind of run out. But I think we spoke about luminosity on the show a while ago, and it seems that a new standard came in, because the standard they used to use back in the old days was curbed because it was to be dangerous or something. And not good for humans. And so they had this cap on how luminous it could be. And that kind of knocked the head on all of this. But this one that Ian's talking about may be different. I can't remember what he said, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do hope so. Can you feed back, Ian, and let us know, is it standing the test of time? I have one other question, though, which, again, is perhaps with my pedantic hat on. But Ian says this is useful for someone who sometimes, or more often, drops things outside, usually in a field, and can't find them again. I can't get my head around how green sticky tape that glows in the dark is going to help you to find something you've dropped in a field in the dark.
No, you put it round the thing before you lose it.
Oh, I see. So that means you have to put it round all things that you might conceivably drop in a field. I wondered if he was using it as a torch or something. I thought, is it so bright you can just hold this tape out in front of you? All right, I'll get back in my box. Thank you, Ian.
You could put it all over the back of your mobile phone, for example.
Or just cover the field in green tape.
Yes. Right, I've got the grand cleaning challenge.
Yes, indeed, I've been following this.
I posted a photograph in the movie group of these two wall switches, which were kind of a bit manky and rusty and horrible, and I threw it out to the group. And Chris Kelly said, why don't you try Autosol Metal Polish? Cheapest chips at £5.70. So I got a tube in, and then when the tube arrived, I looked to my left and I saw my pot of the pink stuff. And I thought, oh, I didn't try the pink stuff. Maybe I should have done.
Yes.
The pink stuff basic tub that I got was £6.50. So, again, cheap as chips. So, I thought I'd do a test challenge. So, on the left hand, in the pink corner, we have the pink stuff. And in the white corner, we have the Autosol Metal Polish, which is actually designed, I think, for using on vehicles. You know, Chris Kelly's a keen motorcyclist.
Yes.
And I think he uses it on that. Anyway, I applied it to this. On the left-hand side one, I put the pink stuff, and on the other one, I put the... So, I've done a before and after photograph, which I will post into the MeWe group when we've finished recording. But what do you think? The left-hand side one is the pink stuff, and the right one is Chris's stuff.
Well, it's difficult to know exactly because of the picture and the lighting in the picture and the reflections, etc. I think perhaps the left side has it by a whisker.
Ah.
But it,
okay.
It is...
Okay.
I have to say, though, at this juncture, hats off again to you, sir, because what I would have done was I would have got in the car and gone to B&Q and bought some new surrounds. So
yeah,
good
yeah.
for you yeah. for making, doing, mending and
well,
trying
yeah.
to sort them out. No, I think the left hand has it just by a whisker. But as I say, it could be that it could just be the photograph.
The reflection, yeah.
Yeah.
There is that. And someone else actually mentioned that when I was talking about it before. That you need to be careful about how you photograph chrome.
Yes,
because chrome. Anyway, someone else in the group pointed out that you can use WD-40, which I didn't realise. So if you want to clean chrome, WD-40 also is worth a try. But I think, personally, seeing these things in person,
yes.
I think that Chris's stuff is better. I think that, I do accept that you can't see the reflection very well, but I think that on balance...
On reflection!
On reflection, I think that the Autosol Metal Polish did a slightly better job. But they're both very good. And the pink stuff is really good as well, as we've said before, for all sorts of jobs. So, yeah, thank you, Chris, and thank you, everyone.
And WD-40, who knew? And, of course, don't forget Coca-Cola. I mean, we've talked about that on the show
before. Yeah.
You could probably get an even better shine with a can of Coke.
Yeah.
I want one
of those.
What do you want, then?
I want, this is a very pertinent point, because the ceiling light in my bathroom is kind of keeps going off and on, and I thought, yeah, this thing would be really useful. This is a smart exhaust fan for the ceiling, which also would be really helpful, because the exhaust, the extractor fan in my bathroom is also broken, so I have to leave the window open all the time. Anyway, this thing is called the Smart Exhaust Fan. It not only is an exhaust fan, which sucks out all the stuff from your bathroom while you're showering or whatever.
Yes.
But it also is a light. And it changes lights in a rotational kind of RGB way. You can control it with an app, of course you can. And it apparently it works really well. The cherry on the cake, though,
yes,
is that it's also a Bluetooth speaker. So you've got this thing on the ceiling. It's a light. It's got it's got multicoloured lights. It's a fan for sucking out all your shower steam. And it's also a Bluetooth speaker. Now, recently, I've been using a Bluetooth speaker in the shower just for kicks, and it works really, really well. Now, the bad news here is that it's only available from Home Depot.
Right.
Now, this will appeal to Elizabeth again. Hello, Elizabeth again. You'll have to get one of these and test it out for us, because it works on Home Depot's own network system, so it wouldn't work in the UK anyway, but apparently it will work in America if your device is part of that Home Depot network. They wouldn't even let me onto their website, you know. I even tried to get onto it using a VPN, and it was even too clever to let me in there. Really odd. So yeah, America only. But yes, it sounds like a lot of fun, and it just so happens at the moment I could do with it. But there you go.
Yeah, I've managed to find one just by Googling Home Depot Smart Exhaust Fan, and I can see some pictures of it. By the way, there is, or at least there certainly was, a Home Depot in England at the Dartford Tunnel. When you go over the Dartford Crossing, if you look down to your left, there's a bloody great big Home Depot there.
Is there? Do they have a network, though? That's the thing.
I do not know. I only know that.
That's the reading up about this thing. It seems that in America, the Home Depot run this thing like Google Home or like Tapo, whatever it's TP Link or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And their stuff works with that network, and so you've got to have their app on your phone to control it and to make it all work. It's all locked into their system.
Yeah.
That's how it read to me. So even if there is a Home Depot in the UK somewhere, which I couldn't find, but obviously you did, I don't know that this would work in the UK.
Well, anyway. It may not be there anyway. It was some. I just remember having driven past it in the past.
It was a nice idea, and so many things. We love things that do lots of things, don't we?
We do.
Better
before. Now, this is going to be a bit tricky for you to discuss, Ted, because I know and respect that you don't actually listen to live television, watch live television, or I don't think you listen to much live radio either, do you? So this may not be something you can join in with tremendously, but I just want to make the point. We do. We have the radio on in the house almost constantly. My mother has Radio 4 on, and I do watch television. And I have noticed in recent years that, I mean, one of the genre of programmes that I enjoy watching are educational programmes, you know, science programmes, technical programmes, programmes that educate, programmes that you watch and you learn something. And I've noticed that in recent years they have started to be presented by comedians. Or if they're not presented by comedians, they try to inject comedy, or they have a comedian in there making light of everything that's discussed. And I don't like it. It's dumbing down. It's part of this whole dumbing down of the world, and people have short attention spans, and if we don't make them laugh, they'll stop watching. Horizon, perhaps you know Horizon, the science programme on television, was my favourite programme. I watched it for years and years and years. I got that from my father, and I love Horizon. And Horizon would occasionally have a bit of dry humour in it, but it was an educational, serious programme. Now, the equivalent, I mean, Dora O'Brien is a name that springs to mind. Now, no disrespect, he's fantastic. I respect him very much. It started with Dora O'Brien. Dara, beg your pardon, presenting, Dora's his sister, I guess, presenting science programmes, and they had a comic lilt to them. And I quite liked that, and it was okay. And he just made the odd dry comment. Now you get that there's this thing called the Infinite Monkey Cage, for instance, on radio, which presents very interesting science that's enjoyable and educational to listen to, but it's all full of this ha-ha funny jokes and let's make fun of everything. And I just wanted to just have a quick whinge and say 'twas never thus before. Now you put on a programme that you think is going to educate you about something and they insist on filling it chock full of unfunny, or perhaps sometimes funny nevertheless, jokes and silliness that you really don't need on an educational programme. End of sermon.
People want entertaining. They don't want hardcore facts. They don't want brown and black suits to wear. They want pink and colourful, friendly, nice, glowing things to wear. The world has moved on from the boring conservative.
But it wasn't boring conservative.
They're trying to...
Go on. Yeah, I'm not allowed to interrupt you. Finish.
Just to reiterate, really, they're trying to inject entertainment because that's what they think people want. Obviously, you don't, and perhaps it's an age thing as well. But I guess someone sat up at the BBC particularly and said, right, it's time we moved on. Let's start BBC Three now, and let's get some kids in the block, and let's try and make the world more entertaining. Your turn.
What was wrong with having both? In the good old days, you had people in bright coloured sequins and suits, and you also had the brown and blue suits presenting the facts. Now, why can you not have one for one camp and one for the other? Why do they suddenly have to be homogenised and combined like that?
Incidentally, the Monkey Cage thing is also a podcast. That's why I know it, because I listen to the podcast.
Right.
And I find it to be really, really entertaining, and I thoroughly enjoy it. I like Brian Cox as well. And, you know, the whole thing, they do slow down between all the kind of larking about, and they do get the serious points across. We differ. I think that we differ, because I quite like the approach.
Yeah. No, and I have, actually, to be honest, I have nothing against The Infinite Monkey Cage for the genre in which it sits. What I'm saying is, what's happened to the purely serious educational programmes? Why can we
Nobody
not have both
them.
As we used to? I would.
Nobody watches them anymore because they're all so boring and people fall asleep.
It's when you go into a shop and you say, have you got X item? And they say, no, people don't want it anymore. And I say, well, this people does, so...
make one for me.
Yes. All right, well, it sounds like a very good introduction to Room 101. Oh, it's me. Sorry. I was just having a sip of tea and thinking I'll let Ted get on with it. Gareth Williams. Sorry, Gareth, to you too. He brings us UK, and specifically BBC, TV licence, not a million miles away from what we were just discussing. Gareth says, you may recall the blurb, due to the unique way the BBC is funded, etc., etc., essentially forcing you to pay to watch any live content anywhere at any time, even if it's not on the BBC. Deliberately vague in the wording and not so deliberately vague in the wording and a not so stealth tax. It's surely time to go. Now, this is going to be more your camp than mine, Ted, because I'm not really well up on the license and exactly what it covers and how and why and where and when. So it's not really my place to comment. What say you?
I do agree with Gareth. I think it is time to go for those that don't want to. You know, because everything is advert driven now. And I am aware of a plan afoot that is forcing the BBC to be advert driven by, I don't know, 2030 or something. And they are going to change to move with the times. But the whole thing about the license fee, as I understand it at the moment, is if you don't watch anything live, then you don't need to have a TV license. Or there was this other thing about having the equipment which was capable of watching anything live. It's a bit of a woolly area, to be honest, and I don't think anyone fully understands it. Now we've raised it on the show, I'm sure we'll get letters and people will say, this is what it's about, but I don't have a TV license because I never watch anything terrestrial on TV. I never watch anything live on YouTube. Actually, that's a complete lie, because I watched the Google event. That was live. I'll be arrested. Anyway, that's the kind of general rules, I think, about how it works. I think it changes in time, and it will. The BBC licence fee will eventually, I think, go away, and everything will have adverts.
I'm a self-confessed snob, and I love the BBC. But I must say, even though the BBC doesn't show adverts per se, the number of adverts you get for other BBC programmes, you might just as well be watching adverts. You know, there's a break between programmes and you get two or three or four adverts for other things on the BBC. So they're just advertising themselves instead of other companies. So, I do tend to agree. I think on the main, I do agree.
I don't like the BBC anymore. It's too stuffy and conservative and old-fashioned. But that's a topic for another day. Let's discuss that another time when we're really short of material. In the meantime, I'm going to throw into room 101, train companies. Actually, I'm not even sure which one it is. I think it was probably Train Line, or maybe it was Transport for Wales, or maybe it was Avanti, or maybe it was Cross Country. The reason it is very confusing was because when you go to book a train ticket these days, you don't just go and book a train ticket, because your journey is going to be serviced by about 1,200 different companies, depending on which bit of it you're driving, travelling on.
Yes.
The incident here is I was trying to book a ticket for my dad to go down to Southampton from North Wales. My sister and I, both of us, were sat here, and we're both pretty tax-savvy. Tech savvy.
You'd only be tax heavy. That would not be a good thing.
You can't get through to human beings, of course. So that's a better before. Websites are crap. Apps are crap. We spent 90 minutes, me and my tech savvy sister, on two computers with two mobile phones, and we could not get this thing sorted out. In the end, we did, but it was just by more luck than judgment, I think. Once you start introducing variables, like, for example, my dad needed assistance to change when he has to change train, he's not confident about doing it right.
Yes.
So you can book assistance.
Yes.
That complicated the whole auto booking of ticket system. He also wanted his tickets, because he's old fashioned and watches the BBC, he also wanted his tickets sent to him at home, so he could put them in his wallet and take them with him and not have them as a PDF on his phone or whatever else, you know. So that really complicated the whole auto booking system as well. There was another couple of things, because he was elderly, that elderly people want and the majority of people are not bothered about. As I say, in the end, 90 minutes, two computers, two mobile phones, more than two apps. I say, bring back British Rail, nationalise it again, and have one booking office and one train company to deal with, and not 12 to get where you're going.
Hear, hear.
It was, all joking aside, I mean, this really was a traumatic experience, and Dad would never have been able to do it on his own. Though, in the end, as I say, we were just fighting it for 90 minutes, and got there in the end, and the tickets did turn up, and he's got them in his wallet now, so... But yeah, you agree. Nationalise it, eh?
I do agree. And it all comes back to a theme that's sort of been across the last two or three shows, which is, yes, move with the times, but do it slowly at a proper pace so that elderly people and those who are still concerned to do things in the old-fashioned way have time to catch up. You know, we've had two or three items recently of this where, and with my new car, for instance, I said, you know, yes, I know there are features that I don't like, but I'm just going to have to grow up and man up and get used to it and move with the times. But we shouldn't be forced kicking and screaming to move with the times. We should be gently coaxed.
Yes, I agree.
And my quick 101 whinge this show is, again, on account of having my lovely new EV car, EV drivers... this isn't anything to do with cars as per se, who occupy EV parking spaces but do not charge their car. I made my first lengthy trip in the new car with my mother. We went to visit a friend in Devon. We went to a hotel in Plymouth, in fact, and we stayed the night there. And there were four EV spaces, and all four were occupied when we arrived at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. One of them was charging his car. The next morning, when we left at 8 o'clock the following morning, all four cars were still in all four EV parking places, and the one was the only one plugged in. And I was particularly annoyed because it was my first trip away, and I was concerned that I had my mother with me and I needed to charge and blah, blah, blah. You know, that's all not necessary to go into in detail. But it was extremely annoying, and I was extremely pissed off by
What you're supposed to do is you charge your car, and then when it's done, you move it.
I should imagine so. I mean, the protocol isn't written down anywhere. But yes, you've got a car park that's got, 200 spaces in it and four of them have got EV charging points, then you can park your EV car there and charge. But when you finish charging, move out of the way as soon as you can. Let someone else have a turn. Yeah. And, even if it had been the evening hours. You know, the thing is, I haunted the car park. I was up and down like a nun's drawers from the hotel room to the car park right up until midnight, hoping that one of the cars would finally move, and none of them did. And the next morning when we left, all four were still there. And I just thought, that is incredibly selfish.
Yeah. That's very, very selfish. You and your mother do get around, don't you? Blimey.
Yeah, I mean, we do, yes, because it's. I think while my mother is still able to travel, then we should. Carpe that deum, as they say.
Very well done.
Well, I think we're done. Oh, no, we're going to play a jingle now, aren't we? I mean, stand by. Ready? One, two, three. There we are.
A gold star to Jason Bradbury of the Gadget Show fame. And I just wanted to give him a gold star because he was really nice to us. We got him by hook or by crook. Gareth Miles managed it somehow. We got him to come on to our lowly little Tech Addicts podcast this month. And what a nice chap he is. And he's very tech savvy as well. I kind of expected him to be a TV presenter. TV presenter first and tech interested person second, but he clearly isn't. He knows his stuff. Really, really nice of him to come on the show, and he commented thoughtfully and intelligently and had a good conversation with Gareth and I. It was really nice of him, I thought. We've had John Bentley on the PSC show a couple of times now, so we've just got Susie Perry to go, and then we'll have the whole Gadget Show crowd. I don't know if you are aware of Jason Bradbury, but he really is an ever so nice chap.
I'm not, but now I am, and excellent. Thank you, sir.
And also, he told us that he listens to, I don't know how regular or how true it is, but he told us that he regularly listens to our podcast now because of that. So, hello, Jason. Thank you for listening.
Hello, Jason. I'm sorry I've never heard of you.
Oh, dear. Right, OK, back in 3 weeks' time. We're done today. Whateverworks.works is our website. That's where you'll find links to all the stuff we've been talking about today. AidanBell.com is where you'll find Aidan and his stuff. TedSalmon.com is where you'll find me. And all the links out to the MeWe groups and the other audio podcasts that the group do as well. Yes, having lots of fun with podcasting and MeWe groups, I guess, is the bottom line. Last word to you.
I'm off to get some fresh air. I think there's too much CO2 in here. I don't know what's going on. I think same with you, Ted. We started out the show thinking we were a bit lethargic, and I think we've sort of gone up the wall during the course of the hour.
But that's people like that. People like indeed. The way we rattle on about bugger all.
Absolutely. Serious?
Anyway, there you go.
Good Lord, no.
Last one. Right. One last thing to say, as always, spitting it out. Don't forget...
Whatever works. Oh, dear me.
It's woken us up, hasn't it?